Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to Unscrewed, the show that knows that real liberation includes sexual liberation. I am your host, Jacqueline Friedman, and welcome to a book launch edition of Unscrewed. It is today, if you are listening to this, on the day it is available, the first day that my new book, Believe Me, How Trusting Women Can Change the World, is available to you, the public. And I'm so excited for you to read it and talk to me about it and all of that. But of course, I didn't make it alone. I'd love to take credit for it, but I had a really brilliant co-editor in Jessica Valenti. My book baby mama from Yes Means Yes knocked us up again with another book. Is that really gross, Jessica?
It's just the right amount of gross.
Excellent. Keep it. Yeah. Jessica, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I'm very excited.
Are you? I'm so excited to think about people finally reading this book.
Me too. It's been like a long time coming, and now that it's finally here and like in the moment that we're in, it feels perfect is the wrong word because there's lots of like terrible things happening, but I'm like very excited and proud, I think is the right sentiment to share this with folks.
It certainly feels urgently necessary right now.
It does.
But before we talk about it, you know how it goes. We have to put you through the lightning round.
Oh my God, I forgot about this. Shit.
Pop quiz. What's been making you happy this week?
Remembering the sledding I did this last weekend.
You went sledding?
I should clarify. I watched my kid go sledding because I don't sled anymore because I got in a skiing accident when I was younger. And so like I don't do fast things on the snow.
That's fair.
We got like two really cute sleds and we went to like a big hill when it snowed upstate in Woodstock and Layla like sped down and it was the happiest I've seen her in a really long time. And it was like a very like pure, cool moment that was entirely not online, which also felt really nice.
I have to say, look, I know that Instagram is not real life and that life is complicated, but like that kid seems to be having a great childhood.
She does, and I like to remind her of that as much as possible. I'm like, listen, anytime anything comes up, I'm like, you are so lucky. Like, you're having such a nice summer, life, winter.
Yes!
Everything is working out.
She's got, like, Woodstock. She's got the city life. She's got cool friends. Well, she's got, like, a better fashion sense than I do.
Me too!
Anyway, what is the best sex advice you ever received?
I think expecting reciprocation was some of the best advice I've ever received.
Where did you learn that? Who told you to expect reciprocation?
You know, it's really funny. It came from like a friend, actually a younger peer in high school. Like I remember having this conversation with her, you know, about my high school boyfriend. And it was just like, she had it built in that like reciprocation was just a given. And it was not something that I had considered, but not something that I expected. Right. And so it was like a nice little transformative teenage moment.
That's amazing. I'm so glad you got it early.
I know. Same. Though it was like totally hilarious. I remember not hilarious, actually quite terrible. A college boyfriend, being like really upset enough about that expectation that he like brought it up in a drinking game. Like it was what was it called? It was like what's the Boston word for cool? He was from Boston.
Wicked.
Yes, thank you. It was like wicked or not wicked, like, and you like would say something and like drink or whatever. And like his like not wicked was like, oh, like you expect to, you know, get off every have sex. I was like, huh? Like no one had ever just like flat out said like, that's really stupid. But yeah, it was very cool.
I'm going to like give you a pedantic Boston grammar lesson right now because I can't stop myself.
That's fine.
Wicked actually means extremely.
Oh, like wicked cool. Like yes. Wicked. Right.
Sorry to be a Boston pedant.
It's all good. I would do the same with New York, believe me.
Yeah. All right. So what... brace yourself for this one. What has been making you maddest or saddest about the sexual culture lately? I made up this question long before the Trump administration.
I mean, I think that I actually think that the Trump administration is the answer. I mean, there's so much to choose from. How do you choose just one? I do think almost every day about the fact that the president is a rapist and like that we're not talking about it every single day.
The president is a rapist who now has like a legal team made up almost entirely of sexual predators. Like,
yeah, it's just like,
and they're enablers.
Like a buffet.
Yeah.
It's a fucking cornucopia of rapists. And I just find it really depressing that despite all of this cultural progress we've made and progress we've made around like the conversation around sexual assault and rape and Me Too and all of these things, that like this is just sort of a given, like the president's a rapist, like what's next? It's so distressing to me.
Yes. All right, what's a myth about sex that you used to believe but don't believe anymore?
That's really hard. I don't know. Oh, actually, this is like super embarrassing though.
Yes, that's what I live for. So,
when I was younger, like I knew that people had sex, that like some of sex was like penis and vagina, right? But I didn't know that like penises when erect pointed up. I thought they pointed down. And so I thought that the way that people had sex was sort of like a scissoring situation.
You know, that would make so much sense because when a penis is just hanging there, it's pointing down.
Exactly.
Like, why would you know it would change direction while it's erect?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so, like, I really thought that it was just like, oh, like, that seems, like, really weird. yeah. It took me a little while. I think I was probably, like, in junior high or something, and I saw, like, some book or some movie, and I was like, oh, okay, I guess that's how it's done.
That's but, amazing. Yeah. No one has ever had that one before, so...
I'm so proud.
I've been doing the show long enough that, like, when someone has a brand new one, like a truly new one, I'm delighted.
Amazing.
That's amazing. Yes. All right, last lightning round question. Who's someone that you want to give a shout out to who's doing brave work to unscrew the sexual culture?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, can we name people in the book? Is that too, like, on point?
Yeah, you can name people in the book. The only rule is you can't name me, but whatever, you're over me, so.
I almost think everyone in the book, but like, I'm really excited to see Moira when we do our Books Through Magic event. I think like the stuff that she is doing is so amazing.
Say her whole name for people who don't know.
What's that? Moira Donegan.
Yeah. Moira Donegan, creator of the Shitty Media Men list.
I mean, what a fucking badass. I'm also super excited. Like the fact that Soraya Nadia McDonald, who I love, and like who I'm so obsessed with, and I've been obsessed with her writing forever, is in the book and out there doing this amazing work. Like it all just, you know, it just like gives me some hope. Like when I'm thinking about how terrible things are every day, like the fact that there are people like this who are contributing so much and like giving so much of themselves too, right? Like, and like you and I know this, but like, to do this work, it's not just like you're writing something down on a page or doing a 9-to-5 job. Like it's, you're really like giving a piece of yourself in this major way and putting up with a lot of bullshit to do it. And so it's pretty amazing to like share space, written or real life, with any of those people.
Yes. You survived the lightning round, even though you had no preparation because you have amnesia. It's not my fault. You've been on the show a bunch of times.
It's true. I should know by now.
So let's talk about our book, baby.
Let's do it.
We have two babies now, Jessica.
I know. Full family.
I know. We have a little nuclear family. of books.
It's very impressive.
Yes. So let's talk about how the Believe Me concept came to be. I mean, you and I started talking about the fact that Yes Means Yes was going to be 10. And the publisher was like, do you want to add a couple essays for a re-release? And I think it was you who said, like, let's do a whole new fucking book. Like,
was it? Oh, good. That makes me feel smart. you know, Yes Means Yes was so incredible, and it did so much, and it did so much more than we were expecting or maybe even could have hoped. That, like, of course we had to do something for the 10-year anniversary. And, like, we had talked about, you know, I think even before, like, really Me Too happened, we had talked about, do we do a second edition? Do we, you know, like, how do we, like, what do we do? But then when we started really talking about it, it just became so clear that, of course, we need a new book, right? Like, the conversation has shifted and grown and progressed. And I think we also wanted to replicate the feeling that we had with Yes Means Yes of putting something out into the world that really shaped the conversation, right? And, like, brought new ideas to the forefront. And that wasn't just about joining in the conversation that was already happening, though we are doing that too, but about, like, really contributing, like, a new big idea.
Yeah. And also uplifting some of the big ideas that are sort of, like, bubbling in different corners of, like, feminist social media that, like,
exactly
when you put them all together in a book in conversation with each other, it brings them into the culture in a different way, which I feel like is part of what happened with Yes Means Yes also. Like, a lot of the ideas in Yes Means Yes were already being explored and expounded on and percolated in, you know, the comments threads on Feministing and other places. But it wasn't.
No, but they needed to live forever. Yes, they needed to, like, be published and not be ephemeral and, like, live forever. And it's, you know, it's, I feel like it's a little bit different now in that, like, people, there's so many more people, like, who are part of that online conversation now. But everything moves so fast, right?
Yeah.
Especially with social media, that things don't live for a long time online in the way that they do in books, in the way that they should when you are shaping a conversation about something so important.
And so there was just so much bad faith discourse both at the time when we were talking about what to do our new book on and, like, an organizing principle, and also now, which we should say, there was so much bad faith discourse about the idea of believing survivors and believing women, which are overlapping but not identical ideas. And that we just wanted to be, like, definitively, here is what we fucking mean, you assholes.
Yeah. it's totally right. And, like, this is part of what I wrote about in,
this
my
is
essay,
your essay
was, like,
yeah.
this, you know, mischaracterization of what believe women meant, and this sort of deliberate tinkering with that idea and phrase to be believe all women, like, always believe women, believe every single, you know, like,
every single word any woman ever says,
right?
Yeah,
like, they really, like, bad faith actors on both the left and right, like, really, really honed in on that phrase and took it and twisted it and used it to mean, see, Me Too is an overcorrection, these conversations have gone too far. What they're saying is believe women in contrary to all evidence, which of course was not the conversation, which of course was not the call to action or the ideology or the, you know, or the idea. But it was very smart of them because it was a great way to discredit the amazing conversations and work that was being done and to discredit the experiences that so many people were talking about. And so I was really glad that we decided to grab onto that and say, like, no, absolutely not. Like, you don't get to take that. You don't get to twist that. That is central. That is the radical idea of change. And we are going to hold on to it. We are going to explain what it means.
Well, and the reason that they remain so determined not to engage with it in a good faith way is because it is a transformative idea, which is what the book is about. And I say is and not was because literally every time I post about the book now, I'm still getting people in my mentions being like, believe me, my ex-wife said blah, blah, blah. Like, I swear, like, I'm sure you're the same way. Like, I think that we're in for it probably for the rest of our lives now. But
you know what? It really does go to show, as you said, like how powerful it is, because the same exact thing happened with Yes Means Yes, right?
It's this true.
It's like when people were like, no, it's the presence of a yes, not the absence of, you know, of a no. People were like, oh, what do you mean? That goes too far. And how are we ever going to do that? And that's, a totally bananas idea. No one's ever going to do that. And that's going to ruin sex. And that kills romance. And, you know, every possible thing you could imagine got thrown at that. And I do see like the same exact thing happening here where it's like, oh, that is like so radical. And I hope that, you know, in 5 or 10 years, we'll be having, you know, another conversation on your podcast about how that is changed.
Yeah. Yeah. And how that the ideas in this anthology have been metabolized throughout the culture and are just not challenged. I mean, you can still find dipshits who want to argue about yes means yes with you, but it's not.
It's much harder.
No, it's much harder. And I literally, I saw a friend of mine posting about a class she's taking on like theories of consent, and I was like, wow. that class didn't exist 10 years ago when we published Yes Means Yes. That class exists because we published Yes Means Yes.
Yes, exactly. Like it's so exciting. It's, yeah, I mean, it's such like a great and again, like that's what gives me hope, is like that people do want to talk about this and think about this. And every time like I get one of those comments and I get the same comments, I'm just like, wow, that like what terrifies you about that
exactly.
idea?
Exactly.
Like, what is it that makes you so afraid of the idea of believing women?
So can we talk a little both about what we mean by believing women and then about the essays that came in and like shifted our own thinking? But first I want to make sure that we talk explicitly. We've been sort of talking around it, but like when we say believe me, we mean that we need to live in a culture, we demand a culture where women are treated as inherently credible and important. Yeah. And I think both of those words are crucial. Like you can't just say credible because there's a number of essays, I think, who in Believe Me that point out beautifully that there are lots of instances you can find where women are accepted as credible and then ignored, right? Christine Blasey Ford being, you know,
exactly.
top of mind. And I should say for folks who are listening, like you're going to read a lot about her because a lot of our contributors were writing their essays during the Kavanaugh hearings. So it was.
And bless them for doing that. Like, can you imagine?
Oh my God.
Like the stress of writing about these issues, like while this
it was bullshit. Wild because we obviously worked on this concept for like a year before the Kavanaugh hearings we were working on, or more than that. But it happened to be what happened while the essays were assigned but not due yet was like this whole believe me conversation. And one of the things that happened that, you know, Dahlia Lithwick talks about most explicitly, but also Catherine Cross talks about this in different ways, is it was an example of watching women be believed but not treated as important. Right. Like,
believed and then brushed aside.
Right. And so believe me for us means women are approached as de facto credible and important until proven otherwise. Like, obviously, some people are not credible and some people we want to tell to go fuck themselves. Right. Like, but that the starting point is women are credible and important.
Yeah. And I think for me also, there is this optimism that goes along with the idea of believe me, like this idea that things can actually change, right? Like, as you said, there is this, yes, we believe Christine Blasey Ford and we believe that you are sexually harassed, or, but you know what? This is just how things are. This is just the way that men are, right? Like there is still this undercurrent where we're just expected to live with it. That this is just how the world is, or this is just the way that the country is. And I feel like for me, believing women means not just like hearing those stories and finding them credible and finding them important, but like thinking about them as a roadmap to move forward and to actually do something about it.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's not just, and like we had so many conversations about this, you know, this is not like a passive idea. This is an active idea that requires action.
And one of the hardest things working with our contributors was asking them in every essay to not only talk about where are we being harmed by the disbelief of women? But also, what, like, envision a world where things are better, right? And each one of them, to their credit, does. Although I remember, I think it was Soraya Shamali, I don't think she'll mind me telling this story, was like, I'm not sure I believe we can get to this better place. And I was like, humor me. It doesn't require you believing we can get there. I just want you to describe what it would look like. Because I think it's so important as a movement. I think this is one of the things we did well, almost instinctively, and Yes Means Yes, and I wanted to do deliberately in Believe Me, that we not only be articulating visions of, like, here's where the injustice is, but also articulating visions of what the just world looks like, so that we know what we're working toward and not just against, because everything is so fucking grim otherwise. And and so I find the book really energizing.
And that's why, like, you have to be so proud of these contributors, right? Like, it's such a challenging
prompt. We pushed them really hard, yo. We did.
Yeah. It's a really, really challenging prompt. Like, it's something I struggle with all the time.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
And it's hard because in some ways it's sort of necessary. Like, you have to have that optimism. You have to have this idea that something can change, or that a better world is possible, in order to get up every day and do this work.
Right. It's like Rebecca Solnit, Hope in the Dark, right? Like,
yeah.
Who's not in the book. I just mean the essay, her book, Hope in the Dark, is amazing. But, you know, and her, it's basically less a feeling of hopefulness, but like a decision, like, if I decide that there's no hope, then I make it more likely that there's no hope because I don't take any action, right? But if I decide that it's possible things could change, then I might take action to make that more possible.
Right.
All right. So which essays, like, when they came in and you read them, were you like,
ooh.
Or like, this changes the way my brain works, or like, this is a totally, like, this introduces a new concept to me, or like, holy shit.
It's so hard. I don't want to choose just one. I mean, I think Sassafras Lowry's was challenging.
So great. Cool. Yeah.
Was great for me about, and the essay is called, it's Can BDSM Save Us, right? Can BDSM Save Us?
I think that's the title. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm almost positive that's the title. And I think they really took this idea of, what could a future look like? What could a world look like, right? Where survivors are believed, where queer people are believed, where young people are believed, and didn't just like imagine a future, but talked about their own experience with living in that sort of community. Yeah,
which was amazing. It's sort of the only, one of the only reports from the front of like the future we're trying to create. That are, the other one that I can think of that's like that is Sarah Deer and Bonnie Claremont's Gossip is an English Word, which is about how in Native communities, there's no word for women telling each other information that has like this negative connotation the way gossip does, that it's actually a positive thing, and there's literally no word to connote what gossip does and how that that changes what's possible in Native communities. And I that one, when she pitched it to me, because I reached out to Sarah because I obsessed with her, was like, will you write something for us? And she immediately was like, I've been wanting to write this with Bonnie for like a while, and here's the concept. And I was like,
perfect.
You must write that for us, and it's so good.
Yeah, you mentioned it already, but you know, the other essay for me that just hit me in a like a very emotional place was Dahlia's. Where she described being in the room during the Kavanaugh hearings and what that felt like, and what it, you know, describing the women around her and the other, you know, female reporters. And I think she just, you know, not all of us were in that room, but we sort of felt like we were there watching. And there was this sort of national moment of like PTSD with a lot of women that I know around those hearings. And to have her describe it in that way and almost like validate it also, I thought it was just like a wonderful essay. It's hard to call it like, you know, it was not a, like a joyful essay. It was hard to read, and it brought me back to that place, certainly. But it's so good, and it's so smart. And it also like, it makes you remember that like when people are, you know, this, it's not just like activists who are feminists online or whoever, or survivors who are impacted by this. It's everyone in the room, right? It's everyone there.
The thing I found energizing about that essay, which I had goosebumps the entire time I was reading it, was that it had a real cleansing anger to it, right? Like, it didn't have like a happy ending, obviously, but it it has like a real cleansing rage. Like, it has a very clear rage in it that like I found really validating.
Well, right, and it's the clarity, right? Like, there was a clarity in her essay and of describing what was happening and like putting a name to it, and like let's not like be wishy-washy about like what happened and what happened in that room and how it made us feel.
Yes.
It's necessary. Yeah.
It's so necessary. I am kind of obsessed with Jamil Smith's essay and the amount he managed to like weave together. And his essay is about being a Black man and grappling with this sort of racist history of America, as well as his lived presence as a Black man in America, and the ways that Black women are pressured to not report Black men for sexual violence because of American racism and not wanting to sort of quote unquote throw their men under the bus, or, you know, put them in the system, or, you know, all of that stuff. And it is, for one, he's like a maestro of writing. Like,
his writing's incredible. We were so lucky to get him.
He's a columnist for Rolling Stone, if folks are not familiar, but it's so powerful and it's so complicated and it's so honest. Like, it's really raw in parts, and I was just so grateful for it. It's I don't know if this is condescending to say, but I found it like a really brave piece.
Well, I don't think that's condescending. I think that's accurate.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it's we have to have those difficult conversations about the way that these issues are not just interwoven, you know, outside of us, but in our communities. And it, you know what I mean? And it reminded me of like Sadie Doyle's essay about misogyny and sexism and online harassment and harassment in general on the left.
Which reminds me that I was going to ask you to talk about how these issues are all playing out right now, this minute.
Ooh. I'm trying very hard. You know, it's, do you want to talk about like Warren? Is that what you're...
Yeah, of course I want to talk about Warren.
Yeah.
I mean, also we could talk about Harvey Weinstein or any number of other things.
All of it. Yeah, so the Warren stuff is really hard. I've been like trying to save myself, again, getting back to Sadie's piece, any bout, like really bad bout of online harassment by like really steering clear of the Sanders Warren stuff, you know, specifically around the whole thing where she said, nope, he's, you know, we had this dinner and he said that a woman couldn't be Trump. And I just want
to definitely like, said that to her.
And I word it in that way because I want to be specific, because so many people are like, look, like, here's Bernie in 1986 saying that girls can be president. And it's like, no one ever said that he said women can never be president. Obviously, the conversation, which is a point that a lot of people on the left have made, by the way, is this idea that a woman can't win against Trump in 2020. That is the conversation.
I have personally worried to friends that I don't know, right? Like, yeah. It's not stopping me from backing Warren. Let me be crystal clear about that. But, like, we're also lying if we don't think it's not a drag, right? Sexism is going to cost her some points.
Oh, and like this, like, you know, putting snakes, all of these like snakes in her mentions.
Well, and it's immediately like, you know, assuming that she's lying and that the Warren camp planted the story, which turned out to be clearly not true.
Right. Because she knows that when women talk about sexism, they're seen as whiners and they're seen as untruthful. And so like, it did not surprise me at all that, of course, she didn't put it out there. But also, you know, and like no one talked about this. Anytime Warren has talked about experiencing sexism in her life. And by the way, she didn't like, there wasn't even a conversation where she's like, Bernie is a sexist, right? It was just like a recounting of this particular one thing that he said. Whenever she's talked about sexism, when she talked about pregnancy discrimination, when she talked about sexual harassment, there was this backlash from the left saying, oh no, but that's not true. Look at these school board meetings where it says that she, says that she resigned. Oh wow, really? The official record says something different than a woman? Well, that must be true.
Well, and meanwhile, now like that Bernie's throwing his arm around Joe Rogan, we're all being like too sensitive about Joe Rogan's like transphobia, misogyny, and racism. Like, we don't get taken seriously coming or going.
No, it's exhausting, and it just feels like such a rehash of everything that happened. And it, like, again, it's just like,
yeah,
it's so distressing. And you know, Andrew, my husband, because I was complaining about this to him and just feeling so despondent. He's like, he's trying to remind me, he's like, Twitter's not real life. This is like, you know, a small neighborhood where this is happening. And this is not the conversation that a lot of people are having or believe. And I would like to think that, but I don't know that I buy it entirely.
I mean, I think Twitter's not real life in terms of demographics, right? There's very specific demographics of Twitter that don't mirror the country. But I don't know that that means the country's demographics are better.
Right, and I still think that, like, even just because this is a conversation that we're seeing play out on Twitter and not necessarily like at large in the world, doesn't mean that people, when they see like, oh, Elizabeth Warren said, oh, well, she must be lying, right? Like, we know that
yes
idea or that like default position that a woman is untrustworthy is not just relegated to Twitter.
No, not at all.
In the broader world.
Although I will tell you that I was canvassing for Warren in New Hampshire last weekend, mm-hmm. and the electability question came up.
Yeah.
But people were really more open to, like, I don't know. There's a lot. We were just knocking on doors. People were pretty enthusiastic.
I'm glad. I'm still hopeful. Obviously, I will enthusiastically support whoever the candidate is, and I will work as hard, you know, in my life as for anyone, but like, it's I think it's gonna be hard.
I mean, yeah, I think I would say I will energetically support whoever the nominee
is. Sure, that's
is,
a better way to put it. That's
but I don't know, depending on the nominee, if I will feel enthusiastic.
Sure. That is fair.
Politics, electoral politics aside for one moment, let's end by talking about some of the essays that made us actually feel hopeful, since that's what we want people to also take away from the book.
Ooh.
Like, I loved Sabrina Hirsiusa's essay on survivorship as leadership, especially in conversation with Ayanna Pressley's essay.
Ayanna Pressley. I mean,
the two of them together, I don't think that they're near each other in the book, but they really are kind of a pair. And the idea of, like, survivors taking political power makes me feel, like, all kinds of, like, fist in the air, fuck yeah.
Yeah. And I just want to say, and I, like, because I want it on the record, that I do think Ayanna Pressley is going to be president one day.
God.
I just, like, want it out there. I remember the first time Were we together? Were you with me at this Emily's List event? Or was I with someone else? I was at some Emily's List event a few years ago. And I think I was with Tracer and someone else. And we saw her speak. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, she's going to be president. Like, it was just such a ridiculous.
I mean, I've been around here for a while. I've had to follow her as a speaker a couple of times. Because when she was a city council member.
That's no joke.
Which is... I'm a great speaker and I'm usually very confident, but the two times that's happened to me, I've been like, are you kidding me? Like, you want me to what? I've always been just like obsessed with her. She's amazing. She's just good. And she is the realest. Like, she is the same way she is on TV with every person in her community. Like, it is down to her toes, super real. And you can tell. It just comes across. I just love her so much. And I love her essay. And I love it, especially paired with Sabrina's, which is sort of like the macro micro, right? Her, she's talking about her own experience taking a place at the table of power. And
I also, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, you go.
I was just going to say, like, and this is like on a different level, but like Sam Irby's essay, about the way that women and Black women are disbelieved in medical contexts gives me hope, not because it's a depressing idea, but Sam Irby's writing in general is so amazing and funny and just interesting. It gives me hope that people can write about issues like this and still write about them in a way that like makes me feel light at the end of
them. We can find joy even in talking about it. And the other one that I really want to mention is Tani Ikeda's essay, who's the founder of Survivor Love Letter, and is basically takes the form of a series of Survivor Love Letters and is about the potential of transformative justice and the potential of healing, and is about sort of love as resistance. And it just feels like when every time I read that essay, I had a chance to reread it recently ago because we were pulling quotes for the graphics. And I sort of, you know, a lot of them I was skimming for like the pull quote, but I just wound up rereading her essay. And I feel she accomplishes something with her prose where
I was just gonna say it's like a song. It's like reading a song, you know, like
I feel like I'm being held in community inside that essay, right? Like I just, and maybe it's because I know her a little, but I just feel connected to so many other survivors and through the power we all have. And in a like loving and lush kind of way, you know, like a place that's full, that's fertile in that essay. And it makes me feel grounded and ready. And I just love it so much.
It's amazing. We're lucky. We have a lot of,
I mean, our contributors.
And I'm not just saying this, but like, this, it's a really good book. And it's always easy to say that when it's an
when
anthology.
When it's an anthology. Yes, exactly.
Because you don't feel like too much of like a self-congratulatory asshole, but it's a really good book. These essays are really fucking terrific.
I mean, the people we didn't mention are equally as good. Like, I'm like, I can't believe all the people whose essays are phenomenal that we haven't even name checked.
No, every single one. Like belongs there and is doing something.
Oh, they're so good. I'm so proud and grateful that they trusted us to bring their voices out into the world. And I'm just so grateful. And if any of them are listening, we love you so much.
So much.
And we're so grateful. We can't wait to get your voices out into the world starting today. Woo!
Yes.
Jessica, where can people find you and follow you and possibly see you talking about, believe me, how trusting women can change the world?
They can,
available
they can
now at fine booksellers everywhere.
Everywhere. I am always on Instagram and Twitter, unfortunately, just my full name. And we will be at Bookstore Magic in Brooklyn this week on the 31st.
That's correct. Yeah, I will be, Jessica
evening,
can't make it. I'll be at the Pleasure Chest on the Upper East Side in New York the night beforehand. That's with Dahlia Lithwick and Anuradha Bhagwati, whose essay is also fucking amazing. And Tina Horn, holy shit, Tina Horn's essay. And then at Books Are Magic, we have Moyer Donegan and Matt Luchansky, whose essay is actually a comic.
A cartoon, a comic,
and The Amazing Soraya, Nadia McDonald, we talked about a little. And that's just this week.
Yeah.
And then I'll... So the whole schedule, the whole tour schedule is at jacquelinefriedman.com/events. And Jessica will be at the Books Are Magic one and also at the San Francisco one at the Commonwealth Club. But I'm going to be touring around this great country of ours, this whatever country of ours, in a number of cities with a number of our amazing contributors in various configurations over the next few months. And I would love to see you all there. Also, I don't know how many of you have seen the Believe Me cover, but it features a protest button that says Believe Me. And those buttons are real now. And I will we will both have them to hand out at live events if you want to get
They're
your hands
super great.
On one. They're really, really great. Unscrewed is produced by yours truly, Jacqueline Friedman, and edited by the fantabulous Natalia Rodriguez. Our in and out music is by the Pink Tiles, and our cover art is by Nicole Dodonna. I hope you fucking love the book. I want to hear from you on every channel. Oh, I forgot to say, you can find me on all my socials. You probably know that by now if you listen to this show. At Jacqueline F on Twitter, JACLYNF. At Jacqueline Effable on Instagram, JacquelineFriedman.com for all my shit. And until next week, I'm wishing you safe and happy sex lives. And happy reading!
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.